From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
We have reaction to yesterday's historic guilty verdict against former President Donald Trump.
This was a jury that was chosen by Donald Trump's attorneys and the prosecution. This is how our judicial system works.
Also this week, one group says Florida has lots of folks listed twice on its voter rolls. Others say it's just a ploy to dump properly registered voters.
And this is the first time we're seeing anywhere in the country a state promoting the use of evil AI.
We'll also talk about the hurricane season that officially starts tomorrow, and we'll learn about the ramp up in the investigation into what would be the largest contribution to any historically black college or university. I'm Tom Flanagan, online and on air. This is Capitol Report and the end of week wrap up of top stories from Tallahassee. Former President and presumptive 2024 Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump was found guilty of 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in New York yesterday. Tristan Wood reports Florida politicos and experts are split on their reactions to the verdict and their predictions for how it will impact the election.
The charges stemmed from hush money payments Trump made in 2016 to former porn star Stormy Daniels after the two had an affair. The jury found the former president had worked to conceal those payments on 34 occasions. He is the first former president to be convicted of felony criminal charges. As the ruling came in, Republican elected officials across Florida defended the former president, casting the whole trial as a political witch hunt to hurt Trump's electoral chances. U.S. Senator Marco Rubio went on Fox News minutes after the ruling came in. He compared the case to sham trials against political opponents in other countries.
They just elected Donald Trump president, so politically, I think it's good. I think, unfortunately, they've made a travesty, a mockery of our criminal justice system. I think all over the world right now, they're watching news reports and they're saying, what can America send in to us? Meaning these third world countries, these dictatorships, these crazy places.
Florida Democratic Party Chair Nikki Fried is criticizing Florida and national Republicans for standing by Trump.
No one has politicized the legal process more than the Republicans, who lined up in court with Donald Trump and stood next to him and continued to stand next to him all day yesterday. The Republican Party is no longer the party of law and order. It's Democrats who stand for freedom, democracy, and the rule of law.
Fried, a former public defender, is accusing Republicans of working to damage the reputation of America's justice system for political gain. She says Trump had a fair day in court.
His attorney, some of probably the highest paid attorneys in the country, that sat there for 5 weeks defending Donald Trump, making motions, objecting to the prosecution's questions, and most importantly, was part of voir dire, of the jury selection. This was a jury that was chosen by Donald Trump's attorneys and the prosecution. This is how our judicial system works.
Now that he is a convicted felon, one question that has arisen is whether Trump will be able to vote for himself in the 2024 election. The answer appears to be yes. A 1977 opinion from the state attorney general's office found that a convicted felon can still vote if an appeal is ongoing. The person would lose their right to vote if an appeals court upholds the conviction. Trump's lawyers have publicly stated they will appeal the verdict. Also, while a person convicted of a felony in Florida loses their right to vote until they have completed their full sentence, the situation is different if a Floridian is convicted of a felony in another state. In that case, experts say Florida defers to the laws of that state. In New York, a felon only loses their right to vote if they are in prison. While Trump may still be able to vote for himself after the conviction, how it will affect how Floridians and Americans will support him at the polls is unknown. Rubio believes it will boost his candidacy.
But I do think there's a large number of Americans who didn't follow this trial that are scratching their heads saying, this is too much already. This has gone way too far. I think you're going to see it in the polls. I think you're going to see it in November. I think we saw it already today with the amount of money that came pouring in the last 30 or 45 minutes.
Fried says the conviction will hurt Trump, making it more apparent to voters that Trump is just looking to protect himself with his presidential run.
That you've got somebody who every single day is fighting for himself, is fighting for his friends, is wanting to have huge tax cuts for his billionaires. He's told us all that. And to spend 4 years of his presidency going after prosecutors, people who haven't stood on his side. Well, you have the other side of Joe Biden, who wakes up every single day, is a decent human being who fights for the people of our country.
Some polls from before the conviction suggest independents and loosely attached partisans will be less likely to vote for Trump if he is convicted of a felony. But Aubrey Jewett, a UCF political science professor, predicts Trump's conviction will have a mixed effect on the 2024 race. He says the polls may be correct, but also expects the conviction to further galvanize Trump's base. And he expects Trump's campaign team to capitalize on that.
You know, I already got an email that was from the Trump campaign soliciting funds, talking about the verdict and talking about how unfair it was. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, case in point of the Trump team. You know, I'm sure Trump is and their team are disappointed in this verdict, but they do view it as a way to raise even more money from their supporters.
Jewett says the conviction has thrown the 2024 elections into unprecedented territory. He believes firm predictions about the conviction's impact are just shots in the dark. Yet, he believes the election's outcome will go a long way in defining this new normal in U.S. politics.
Ultimately, it will be American voters all across the country that decide the ultimate verdict on Donald Trump and his, you know, political career.
Trump's sentencing will take place on July 11th. I'm Tristan Wood.
After Florida left a national database last year that was used to check the accuracy of voter rolls, some are questioning how the state will protect against the possibility of voter fraud this November. One organization sent a letter to the state with a list of thousands of potentially doubled registered voters. But as Margie Menzel reports, other groups are pushing back, saying that list isn't accurate.
On May 15th, Florida Division of Elections Director Maria Matthews received a list from a man named Dan Heim, who works with a group named Eagle Eye. The list contained approximately 10,000 names that Heim claims may be registered in more than one state. Matthews sent the list to local election supervisors, but cautioned she wasn't sure how the list was made. Still, the state's actions are concerning for Brad Ashwell, the Florida director of a group called All Voting is Local.
This is the first we're seeing the state promote it, and this is the first time we're seeing anywhere in the country a state promoting the use of Eagle AI.
Ashwell responded by sending his own letter to Secretary of State Cord Byrd. Other voting rights groups and left-leaning organizations, including the NAACP Florida State Conference, Common Cause Florida, Equality Florida, and the ACLU of Florida, signed on. They're concerned that Eagle Eye isn't a good source for ensuring the accuracy of Florida's voter rolls. In the past, Florida has used a national database for that, the Electronic Registration Information Center, known as ERIC. It helped elections officials identify voters who moved or passed away so they could be taken off the state's voter rolls. But last year, Florida withdrew from ERIC. Byrd said in a press release, the state left because ERIC didn't do enough to protect confidential voter information. Here's Byrd speaking with Neil McCabe of One America News. McCabe points out that Governor Ron DeSantis had brought Florida into ERIC in 2019. Byrd says that move was intended to protect the integrity of the voter rolls.
But ultimately, there came a time when that was no longer tenable, and that we were very concerned with the protection and integrity of the data that we were entrusting with ERIC and the partisan nature of some of the individuals that are leading the organization.
But voting officials say Eagle Eye doesn't appear to be a good replacement. In a statement to WFSU, Leon County Supervisor of Elections Mark Early said his office had received the list of potential cross-state voter activity generated by Eagle Eye. But after looking into the names from Leon County, his staff found no evidence of double voting. The issue of double voting is a hot one, in that it's a concern to those who think that people are voting who shouldn't. A recent story reported by the Tampa Bay Times Miami Herald shows that just as Ashwell feared, leaving ERIC made a difference in Florida's election fraud referrals. The unit received 93% fewer referrals about double voters from other states in 2023 than it did the year before. Here's Ashwell.
The Times-Herald did a great job of looking at the report produced by the Office of Election Crimes and identifying that the number of duplicate registrants, you know, people had, you know, registered in multiple states was way down. And that goes right along with what we expected with the state leaving Eric last year. You know, it was the best tool the state had in its toolkit to identify voters that were registered in another state.
In other words, according to the Times-Herald, Florida's voter fraud unit received 72 tips from other states about people who could be registered to vote in more than one state. That's down from 986 or more in 2022. Fewer referrals doesn't mean it's happening less, but that election supervisors have to work harder to stop it. That could be important as a major election looms in just a few months. I'm Margie Menzel.
Hurricane season kicks off tomorrow. National Weather Service Warning Coordination meteorologist Mark Wool is talking about why Florida is expected to see more and stronger storms. Here's an excerpt from the Deeper Dive with Derek Kam podcast from the News Service of Florida.
Now, let me give you some perspective first. A normal season is considered to have 14 named storms, 7 hurricanes, and 3 major hurricanes. That's normal. The prediction for this year is 17 to 25 named storms, 8 to 13 of which will reach hurricane strength, and 4 to 7 of those will reach major hurricane strength, which is Category 3 or higher. Category 3 starts at 111 mile an hour sustained winds.
And so it's a big increase over what we're what we've been predicting, right?
Well, yeah, it's certainly more than we were predicting for last year.
More powerful storms and right. More of them, right?
Yes, and well, yes, this is the highest numbers that NOAA's ever come out with their preseason May outlook. So that's telling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, all the ingredients are in place for us to have a very busy season.
Well, can you explain to us why, you know, there's a lot of talk about why we're seeing stronger storms, if we're questions about whether we're seeing stronger storms. We got punched by Ian, Idalia, Michael. I had the folks here 5 years after Michael. They're still trying to get their, you know, still recovering from that. Are storms getting stronger, and if so, why?
So I can address the official findings from the International Panel on Climate Change, and what it seems the data is indicating is we're not in the long run, like over decades, expecting the number of systems that develop to go up, but we are expecting a higher percentage of those to become those stronger hurricanes.
So they're intensifying.
The intensity, the number of intense hurricanes is expected to increase. And we've seen that really since 2017, there's been a bunch. Not all of which affected the United States, but several did. Michael, you mentioned already, was one of them. Idalia last year over the eastern Big Bend areas. And then there's been Harvey, Maria devastated Puerto Rico in 2017.
Right.
Irma, of course, went up the entire state. So those types of major hurricanes, we are expecting this trend that we've seen to continue.
And what's causing the intensity to increase?
I think it has a lot to do with the ocean. You know, it's in some parts of the ocean are at record warm levels. And, you know, it took the ocean a little longer to respond to the warming climate because that's just the nature of water. But now that it's hot, it's going to take a while for that to ebb away. And so that warm, moist water, you know, well, water's moist, but warmth and moisture
right.
are necessary for the thunderstorms to get started. And then to organize into a rotating storm that then strengthens into a hurricane. For that, you need calm winds aloft, no jet stream anywhere nearby.
That was National Weather Service Warning Coordination Meteorologist Mark Wool on the Deeper Dive with Derek Kam podcast, a product of the News Service of Florida. Hear the full episode wherever you get your podcasts. Well, every disaster expert keeps telling us that every emergency response depends on fast, accurate, and accessible communication. Floridians rely on critical information from the government during hurricanes and afterward for help with impacts like flooding. But what about families that don't speak English well? Despite some efforts at the local and federal levels, Joe Burns tells us that community leaders say they often don't get the information they need.
Warmer seas, wetter air, and slower-moving hurricanes carry the promise of even more inland flooding. A report published by the American Meteorological Society shows that in recent years, freshwater flooding accounted for more than half the deaths caused directly by U.S. hurricanes. Local dangers like flooding and storm surge are often far from the center of the storm. For Floridians, warnings about those dangers can be a matter of life or death. The Census Bureau estimates 570,000 Florida households don't speak English. Most of those speak Spanish. Teresa Chacon is one of those Floridians. During Ian, she listened to Spanish broadcasts but learned what it might mean for her family shortly before the storm hit when firefighters visited their mobile home park in Apopka.
Los bomberos llegaron a avisarnos que teníamos que evacuar porque pues era una zona de alto riesgo.
They brought flyers urging evacuation from a high-risk zone.
En inglés, por supuesto.
Fortunately, her daughter could translate. A failure to reach out to non-English-speaking people in their language before, during, and after hurricanes has experts, like Claire Knox at the University of Central Florida, scratching their heads. She analyzed the 6,000 tweets from Florida's local emergency managers around Hurricane Irma back in 2017. Half of 1% were in Spanish.
It was shocking for us as researchers to see that very few of the tweets were in any language other than English.
5 years later, during Hurricane Ian, 1% were in Spanish. Community leaders say non-English-speaking residents are vulnerable because of language and cultural barriers and distrust of the government. In a review of Hurricane Ian, the state found no problem here. It rated communications a strength, not an area for improvement. Solutions are in the works. Bipartisan legislation would improve hurricane alerts for non-English speakers, along with seniors and disabled people. A new FEMA campaign in six languages carries messages on flood risk and flood insurance. And this year, the National Hurricane Center will give all its public advisories in Spanish. Some emergency managers in Florida are also trying to reach immigrant communities. Stephen Lerner in Seminole County says they use contractors to translate local alerts.
Obviously, getting the message into another language doesn't happen as quick as it does in English, but it happens very soon after.
They work with trusted community agents, including local grocery stores, to help Spanish-speaking residents prepare and get help. At Hope Community Center in Apopka, Felipe Sosa Lazabalet says staff and volunteers tried to bridge the communication gap during Ian with calls, texts, flyers, and phone lines.
Our community, mostly immigrants, did not know the information, perhaps even didn't know that there was a hurricane coming.
He says the center works closely with the city of Apopka and Orange County. In Orla Vista, near Orlando, 81-year-old Gladys Forbe sat in her flood-damaged home and spoke in Creole with the help of an interpreter about her experiences during Ian. She had no idea what was coming.
Eh bien, just mal couché,
she went to bed. It was raining, and then all of a sudden, water is in the bed.
She was rescued through a window and taken away in a boat. Since then, Forbes says she's had no communication from the government, except to cancel her food stamps and Medicaid after her insurance paid out. In Orlando, I'm Joe Burns.
Florida State University System Board of Governors is taking over an investigation into a questionable gift given to Florida A&M University. The historically black college in Tallahassee accepted a $200 million donation from a man who claims he's a Texas hemp investor. But as Adrian Andrews reports, state officials are questioning if he and his gift are legit.
Some officials say they believe Gregory Jerami is a scammer. He's the man who offered FAMU what he says was nearly $250 million in shares to his privately owned company. Jerami is the CEO of Batterson Farms Corporation in Texas. He says his company specializes in growing industrial hemp, and FAMU's hemp research prompted him to make the sizable donation.
To be able to choose a university where our legacy will continue and will be the most impactful for generations and generations to come.
Now, amid growing concern that Jerami's gift may be nothing more than an empty promise, the Inspector General of the state's university system has sent a letter to FAMU, informing the school they plan to step in to, quote, provide guidance and oversight. The group has also hired a law firm to look into the donation. It will be tasked with reviewing and investigating the value of the shares. Meanwhile, the university has been instructed to cut communication with Jerami. FAMU's president, Larry Robinson, kept news of the gift under wraps for months because he says he was bound by a non-disclosure agreement not to tell anyone until after the deal was finalized. Then, during graduation, he announced the gift.
This is a transformative gift to this institution. We can't tell you how much we appreciate it. And to the students, the message here is that somebody is watching all of the time.
Robinson hoped to use the money for student success programs and improving aging athletic facilities on campus, but that idea was short-lived. Since the donation came in the form of shares in Jerami's private company, the school cannot easily convert them to cash, and FAMU would also need Jerami's permission to sell the stocks. Also, it's not clear whether the shares are really worth what Jerami says they are. Kristen Harper, the university's board chair, called an emergency meeting to, quote, understand the facts.
What is our process for major gifts? Did this situation conform to policies, processes, delegated authorities, and internal controls? How and by whom was the value of the gift determined?
Jerami has no previous ties to FAMU. According to his company's website, he founded Batterson Farms in 2017 and began focusing on farming in 2020. Yet there's little information online about his farming business. In 2023, the Texas hemp investor attempted to offer another school a $95 million donation, but that fell through. Robinson says he overlooked Jerami's past because he felt the school needed the money.
I wanted it to be real and ignored the warning signs along the way. There was no personal gain, but the impact on our students and our university would have been extraordinary.
Amid the ongoing fallout over the donation, FAMU's vice president of university advancement resigned from that position, but continues to hold other positions at the university. I'm Adrian Andrews.
You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, STEM researchers are in high demand across the country. In Florida, math is ranked in the top five subjects with the most teacher vacancies for the upcoming school year. Now, Florida International University is partnering with South Florida school districts to take students majoring in STEM subjects and turn them into math and science teachers. WLRN's Yvonne Zumtobel reports from Miami.
Heavy oak doors adorned with wrought iron hinges are propped open, and it feels as if I've gone back in time to a Gothic cathedral. I'm standing in the entryway of Miami Senior High School, one of the oldest high schools in the county.
My mom actually went to this school, my aunt went to this school, my uncle went to this school, and my brother went to this school.
That's Cynthia Garza. She too graduated from this high school in 2019, and now she's back. But this time, she's the teacher. She's been an intern here since January, earning college credits.
My mom is a teacher, my aunt's a teacher, my grandma was a teacher in Cuba. When I was little, I always like played teacher, but I was always a teacher, I was never the student. I was always the teacher giving like quizzes to like my cousins and my brother. So I've always like wanted to be a teacher.
It's early April, and Garza is about to graduate from Florida International University. She's earning a bachelor's degree in mathematics with a focus in math education. She's part of FIU Teach, a program aimed at getting students with STEM degrees to teach in local middle and high schools. During Garza's time as an intern here, she's been teaching Algebra 1 to freshmen. As these students enter the classroom, they drop their cell phones in a pocket hanging near the front door. There are 30 students here. They use their laptops to sign into an app called Kahoot, an online platform that makes learning a game.
So, like, a question will go up on the board, and then they'll have, like, let's say a minute or 2 minutes to do the question. In vertex form, you can get what from it? The vertex, yes. So what we're going to do is we're going to find the vertex for each.
Garza has already been offered a full-time teaching position here starting in August. Qualified STEM teachers are in high demand. Math ranks fifth for the subject area with the highest number of teacher vacancies across Florida public schools, according to the State Department of Education.
I definitely do think this program helps teachers a lot more, because I like the way that FIU kind of like focuses on the subject itself, because you really have to like have another mindset to like go through all of those math classes, and it's a lot more math classes that you would take in comparison if you just had a math education degree. I'm with my mentor teacher, and I'm pretty much with him the entire time. Like, he does not leave me.
So after every problem, Ms. Garza and I are going to do an explanation. Let us know if you need anything. Yes, question.
Garza's mentor teacher, Jose Pavon, is also a graduate of FIU Teach.
So first of all, we have to be able to make the connection between the math that you're doing and what it's giving you for the graph guy.
This is Pavon's fourth year teaching. He didn't know he wanted to be a teacher until after earning a bachelor's degree in biology.
I realized I wanted a job that was more social, a lot more communication, wanted to be around people. And while I love labs and stuff and experiments, it was very lonely.
So when Pavon went back to school, he tried an FIU Teach intro class and loved it.
You get your feet wet. You're just trying it out. And if it's not for you, it's not for you. But you can't say you didn't try. You can't say you didn't go into the classroom and give it your best shot.
One of the ways FIU Teach recruits prospective teachers is by going into STEM classes and pitching students who are majoring in subjects like math, science, and engineering on taking an introductory teaching course. It places them in K-12 classrooms. Pavon interned here at Miami Senior High School. He's been working here ever since.
And I also think that a lot of people think because they understand the content, they can teach it. And I think there's a big disconnect there.
Pavon thinks the FIU Teach program bridges the two. Nearly 11% of math classes at Florida public schools are taught by teachers not certified in math, according to state data.
See you tomorrow for your test.
Later that same day, I take a ride to FIU and attend a weekly workshop for current FIU Teach students. FIU Teach is based on the UTeach model, a national program from the University of Texas. FIU's program is one of 55 across the country. Nicole Diaz is a biology major. During her freshman year, FIU Teach staff went to one of her biology classes and pitched the introductory course.
And I was like, okay, you know what? It's one credit. It's not too much of a strain.
This is her final semester. Diaz is an intern at the Magnet High School in Miami that focuses on environmental and biomedical research, as well as engineering and robotics.
So I will be starting in the fall as their new marine science teacher. Yeah, so it's actually my alma mater, so it's very interesting. It's been a very fun experience going back as a teacher and seeing all of my teachers and now being at a more colleague level.
Then there's Juan Sanchez. He's graduating with a math degree and has been teaching algebra at his alma mater, Cypress Bay High School in Weston.
And it's the same high school that my sister goes to, and my sister's a senior, so some of the students are my sister's friends, and I know them, and it was a little bit awkward at first to tell them, like, yeah, you gotta call me Mr. Sanchez now.
Mr. Sanchez has found teaching to be very rewarding.
When you see the students that hate math, or they just don't wanna come to school, they don't wanna wake up early, and they come, they put in the work, they understand, they learn, and they have fun in the classroom, it's just wonderful.
I'm Yvonne Zumtobel in Miami.
This story is part of WLRN's reporting project Roll Call, produced with support from the Education Writers Association. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Casey Chapter, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Derek Hamm, Joe Burns, and Yvonne Zumtobel. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Evan Rossi, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week on air and online for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.